Welcome to another episode of After the Credits. I am your co-host, Maureen Antunes of Row3.com and QuieterThought.us, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Colleen from the band, Damn Cougars.
Dale from Digital Doodles and Dale42 on Letterboxd.
We're happy to have you back, Miss Colleen. We missed you last month.
I was pretty brutally sick, and I didn't want to actually... I you know what? I hate you less than other people, so I didn't want to spread it.
I feel the love. Did you feel the love?
I did feel the love, yes. It was appreciated. Unfortunately, our office went nuclear toxic when the boss came in sick.
Oh, jeez.
And made everyone else sick. Fortunately, it was the boss doing that.
Oh, jeez.
And he actually fessed up to it, so
there you go. I can trace mine directly to sitting in the theater watching The Thing next to my friend Warren, who said he would have never come out if it wasn't The Thing. It is his number one favorite film of all times. And it's funny because it's all about virus infecting everyone. Yeah. So, yeah, he infected everyone in that theater.
You never melt shit out of ice.
I know. When will they learn?
I know. I swear. They never will. As we shall see later, actually.
It's going to be a trope as much as it is, you know, the person going out alone or the girl going into the lake.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. But you mentioned a band. Would you like to expand on this band notion?
Two of my friends and myself decided to take up bass guitar in December of last year. And we formed a band. And it's truly horrific.
And it's just bassists.
It's three bassists. Yes. Three bassists.
And what was your discovery that you were not the first?
Well, no, have we mentioned the name yet?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Damn Cougars?
Yeah.
Damn Cougars.
You mentioned it at the beginning.
Yeah, the 3 40-year-old broads taking up the bass guitar. Sweet. Yeah, apparently there's already been a band that has three bass guitars basically as the band. And it's the bassist from The Smiths, the bassist from Joy Division, and the bassist from another band that I can't remember off the top of my head, but I recognized it. They formed one. They all took different parts. One took like the high end, one took like low end, and one twiddled around in between the two. So
nice.
I don't know. Now I have to download that somehow.
Bassist in the middle.
Pretty bassist.
I think they're called the Free Basers, which is awesome.
That is kind of awesome, actually. The Free Basers.
If you could do it the way a Brit pronounces three.
Three bases?
That would be even like, God, I can't do it. There's an accent, though, where every time they say three, it sounds like they're saying free.
I don't do accents. Sorry.
Yeah, neither do I. Sorry. Don't look at me.
People don't like me doing accents.
Yeah, we prefer you not.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't think I've ever heard you try an accent.
Oh,
I don't know.
You've blocked it from your memory, honestly.
Don't start now.
I won't. Terrible. I won't even give you an example. No.
Terrible, terrible, terrible.
Simply terrible.
So, but we are here to talk February movies.
Couple good ones.
Yeah, it's looking not too shabby for February, considering I haven't... It's like almost the end of January, and I've been to the theater to see one new movie.
Oh, I'm behind already.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
I haven't seen anything in the theater yet this year.
And there's at least three remakes.
This in February?
In February.
Oh, my God.
Three? I counted two.
You might be surprised at one of them.
Oh, okay. Well, let's jump right in. I'm pretty sure the first one isn't it.
No.
opening February 7th, The Lego Movie.
One,
silence?
One giant pop culture mashup.
Pretty much.
I want to say I'm not interested, but oddly, I totally need to see this film.
I am so there. So there.
Well, you know what? We were talking about the film out there being the single best one product placement.
This might be the second.
I think this one will destroy that film.
There you go. There you go.
I'm just not sure. I'm just not sure. So I don't think it's for me.
Just for people that are wondering, yes, it's an animated movie based on Lego and the minifigurines that come with Lego. And they have incorporated most of all the pop culture Lego that in the last, I guess, 10, 15 years they've been coming out. Yeah. So we got Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman.
Star Wars.
Moses? I don't know. Some biblical figure.
Star
Biblical
Wars. Lego? I missed that set.
So did I.
And then this...
It was that, the Noah set.
Oh, it might be from... Oh, I thought maybe it was like the mummy
voiced
stuff,
by...
Because they had camels and that.
Morgan Freeman.
Oh, yeah. Chris Pratt, Elizabeth Banks, Will Arnett. So, I mean, an impressive voice cast.
You know, I really, it's way too soon to be making this comment, but based solely on the trailer, I really wonder what this movie's going to play like in 20 years. Because the trailer is really, truly all pop culture references.
Yeah.
And those tend not to have longevity.
Yeah.
But I'm sure going to enjoy it in the now.
For sure.
Well, I hope I am.
Yeah.
It looks like it.
Dan really wants to see it, so I have a feeling we're going to be going to the theater to check this one out. There was actually a Sweeted trailer that came out earlier this week. I didn't realize Sweeting was still a thing. And the Sweeted trailer is spectacularly awesome.
Sweet.
It's basically like cardboard cutouts. It's very, very, very funny. I did really enjoy that.
I suspect I'll try and hit this early show.
Avoid the crowds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Also opening February 7th, the long-delayed The Monuments Men, George Clooney's semi-war movie.
Semi-war, yeah. It's not specifically about the trenches and the shooting. It's the periphery.
You know what? I'm comfortable calling this a war movie.
A war movie.
All right.
I mean, it's set in war.
Yep.
And you don't have the main characters killing people, but it's an interesting story that
took a
long time to come out.
Yeah, and it's an interesting take on a little known. I guess now it's far more known than
I think it was
a few years ago.
In some circles, anyway.
Yeah, and so it stars George Clooney, Cate Blanchett, Matt Damon, Bill Murray, John Goodman,
yeah,
a whole whack of characters, and it's basically. The American military put together a group of individuals who are all like art historians and professors and whatever else. And their job was to tell the troops what they could and couldn't destroy culturally. And then, of course, they got a much bigger role in trying to track down the art that Hitler had stolen.
Interestingly, in the last trailer I saw, Clooney's character has a line that I think succinctly defines why art is important in society. And that's probably the core of the movie, although I hadn't really thought of it that way before. It was just an interesting story.
Yeah.
Once a people's culture is taken away or something.
Once they lose their art, they lose their culture.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And
essentially.
Are essentially disappeared in history, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, there was, did you see the Rape Review
a
few years ago?
That was when I first heard about.
Yeah. Ditto. So and at the time when I first saw that, it was kind of like, that was a brand new thing for me.
Me too.
And so to see that it's now sort of becoming more of a thing that people are aware of, it's really important for sure.
It's not too often I get a movie that comes to me with material that is absolutely totally new to me. And The Rape of Europa did.
Yeah.
And I've been interested in this story ever since.
Yeah, me too. So I'm really excited to finally check this out. We'll see. I mean, I have no idea why they pushed it forward. Because it sounded, when they first talked about it, that it was going to be like an Oscar sort of thing. So, I mean, I'm a little bit concerned, but I think it looks interesting enough that I'll still watch it. I'm still really curious.
I still want to see it, yeah, regardless of what reviews it gets.
Yeah.
I'm so there. Bill Murray. I love Bill Murray. Yeah, that man can almost do no wrong. And he does lots wrong.
Well,
and
the
whole cast.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole cast is
impressive.
Yeah.
But this is the exact kind of war film I like, because I've never really been a big fan of like in the trenches blowing each other's heads off kind of thing. It has its place, but it just doesn't do much. But all the periphery going on during war, I love that. Like the counterfeiters that came out a few years ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. And like all the war, like Bridge Over River Kwai and everything else. I love
war
all the periphery.
That aren't specifically about the war necessarily. Yeah.
I love those ones. And this one looks like it could be good.
Excellent. You might like The Book Thief then.
Oh, probably.
Because it also takes place during the war, but it tells a totally different story.
Yeah, we were talking about that a few months back.
Oh, yeah, okay. I can't remember now. Sorry. My mind is like a sieve. Stuff comes and stuff goes. Also opening February 7th, a week earlier from its original release date, Vampire Academy. I am so excited.
It looks fun.
Adaptation of Rachel Mead's novel starring Zoe Deutsch. Apparently is how you pronounce it. I had no idea.
I have a Zoe Deutsch story.
Oh, tell me your Zoe Deutsch story.
You're in it.
I'm in it?
You're in it.
Oh, okay.
Is this like my Han Solo dream?
Not that.
I was going to be worried for mine.
I'm listening to Marina and Shannon on their other podcast talk about Vampire Diaries. And they're like, oh, and I just found out that Zoe and a bus was going by at the time. And I heard Deschanel. And she said, Deutsch. It's like, Zoe from The Vampire Diaries is the daughter of someone famous. It's like, turns out it's, I've forgotten her name now, from Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Leah Thompson.
Yes.
And so I'm like, the next time I saw Maria, it's like, I didn't know that that Zooey Deschanel was a daughter of Leah Thompson. Like,
you still
that
don't
just
know
doesn't
this.
doesn't kind of, and I'm thinking in the back of my mind, like, it doesn't make sense kind of age wise. Like, did I, and Marina just looked at me, what the fuck are you talking about? Well, you know, in your podcast, what? Vampire Diaries. Oh, you mean Zooey Deutsch? Oh, who's she?
Okay, she hasn't been in a lot.
So total distress. Yeah, okay.
But so yeah, based on Rachel Mead's novel, takes place in high school for vampires.
Have you read the novel?
Yes, I've read the entire series.
Is the irreverent irreverence in the novel as well? Yeah.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that, you know, I've been talking with Shannon a lot about the last couple of months as the trailers have become more popular, is that I always got the sense from the novels, and having seen Rachel Mead talk, that she has a very sort of dark sense of humor, and it comes through a little bit in the books, but it's not as in your face. But you have the Waters brothers writing and directing, right? So you have Heathers and Mean Girls in their back catalogs. So you just get the sense that it's going to be pretty, you know, dark and funny, and it comes through quite seriously in the trailers. So I'm really excited. I hope it does well. I have no idea. My gauge is totally off on this one. I don't know if they're going beyond just the fandom at this point. So
the Zooey Deutsch character really stood out for me as
Rose is badass.
Yeah, just a lot of fun. Like, and in a way we usually only see for male characters. Yeah. So nowadays with all of the stuff I've been reading, my head immediately goes to like, wow, is this just a male character with a female? No. And I mean, I hope not, but
no, I mean, I would hope not, because the books are far more involved in Rose's story, right? And you get a lot more background as the books progress, and she's the central character, really. And yeah, it's far more than just, you know, a girl in a typically guy's world, because the Damn Fears, which she is, and the Guardians, which she also is, the Guardians, there's a lot of female Guardians, and her mother plays an important role, and she's the head of the Guardians. So I mean, it's a very matriarchal society, and I think that seems to be coming through in the trailers that I've seen. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the movie.
I'm looking forward to it.
There's a lot of girl power in the books.
I'll just watch Let the Right One Back in again and again.
Whatever. This is going
to
be...
I don't need to see another vampire film, actually.
Well,
it's the pinnacle. They've, you know, done it.
I think that's the other thing that I'm hoping to get out of this, because I got that in the trailer, that the vampire thing isn't the main thread.
No.
It's not... doesn't seem like a big deal as much as it is power relationships and class relationships.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Moving on to February the 14th, Valentine's Day. You know, Valentine's Day could not get much better than it is this year. I must tell you. So,
if you say so.
I was thinking things were kind of weak for Valentine's Day, but, you know.
We get fucking RoboCop on Valentine's Day. Thank you, God.
There you go. What I was thinking.
Like, that is awesome.
Well, that's actually not part of the Valentine's. That's part of Single Appreciation Day. It happens on the same day, actually, as Valentine's Day. We're repurposing it.
Yes.
But
we're bringing it back.
Taking it back. Claiming it.
But before you know, we get to RoboCop and I skip the first movie that comes out on the 14th, because I'll forget and then we won't go back to it. About last night.
Do we have to talk about this?
It's not for me.
Michael Ealy from Almost Human is in it. It's based on a David Mamet play. It's a remake.
Oh,
you didn't know this?
No.
It was made in 1986 with Rob Lowe and Demi Moore.
Oh, and totally
a cast of. It's really interesting. Like, when I saw that, I thought, oh, is this the same film? And sure enough, it's like, it's a remake. I looked at the old 1986 trailer. It is hilarious. They have definitely picked the same moments to feature.
Yeah.
So you have two completely different sets of characters, 30 years apart, saying the same lines.
That's weird.
And it's great. And Jim Belushi is the best friend character.
Oh my God, I totally have not seen this.
See,
a doubleheader might be like there's this one great moment. Like one line is delivered by Jim Belushi and the other by Kevin Hart, who I haven't seen before. But they're like, you know what your problem is? Like, you're just too good looking. You need to get hit by a fire truck or something like that. And you get these two different deliveries from, like I said, two different eras.
Yeah.
It's fun.
See, I just assumed this was another piece of crap from Tyler Perry.
Yeah.
Oh,
I seriously went Tyler Perry, delete.
That was kind of my thought, actually.
David Mamet. You wouldn't believe the name of the play it's based on.
Wow.
Sexual Perversity in Chicago.
Oh, fuck, I'm going to have to watch this.
That's the name of the play.
That's a quality name.
I am going to have to watch this now. Dale just sold me on a movie I had no interest in.
That doesn't happen often.
That's not going to be any endorsement, but I said, I started digging into it, and it's like, oh, wow.
Okay, well.
Disc got history.
I may have to watch the original, too. I'm making a note.
I think that would be a fun doubleheader. Well, maybe not. Maybe if they're too close, but for a class, maybe.
Nice. Okay, now let's talk about RoboCop.
Yes.
Are we all excited
Thank
about
you,
RoboCop?
Citizen.
Damn straight.
Nice.
You know what? I was never into the original RoboCop, so like remaking RoboCop is not like a personal sort of
I don't
of
think
like
we can be friends.
Emotional thing. Whatever.
I really don't think we can be friends.
You watched every one of the Twilight series, and I've let it go.
I won't hold you against you, but I'm really surprised. There's just such great line. You've crossed my line of death. I mean, some of those, I'll buy that for a dollar.
Yeah. I recognize those lines, and I've seen nuggets over the years, but I haven't actually sat down and watched it. So,
it's
like,
it's totally worth it.
There's no emotional attachment to me. Like, often when they remake your awesome, like, teenage sort of
it was,
films.
The one interesting thing, and again, going totally by the trailers, but the original RoboCop very much was a satire of its times.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how much power it would have unless you were familiar with the times. This one feels far more like a drama and a social commentary.
Yeah. And which isn't too surprising considering it's the director, right? José Padilla is the Brazilian director.
Oh, I was looking at his stuff and I have no clue who this guy is.
Oh, yeah. City. Oh, my God. I don't have my iPad in front of me. I totally forgot to bring it. But yeah, he's a good director. I remember Elite Squad is the only one that comes to my mind off the top of my head, and that was really good. But he's a great director, so that was one of the reasons I was excited. And then you have Joel Kinnaman. Hello, gorgeous. Who else? Abby Cornish, Gary Oldman.
Yeah, Oldman looks great.
And
Michael
Keaton is back, amazing.
When I saw Michael Keaton, the little snippet, it's like, dude, I think you might have like a whole new career as
I fucking love Michael Keaton.
Diplomatic, like older sage, like
I'm so thrilled to have him back. Kevin Costner is back in full force.
Oh yeah.
I'm loving it.
Oh, we can talk about that later. But yes, Kevin Costner's doing the movie that Liam Neeson wishes he's doing.
Yeah.
would do.
Yeah.
I think.
I'm getting the same feeling. Oh, I'm so glad to have these guys back. But yeah, I'm super excited about the new RoboCop. It's gonna be badass. Also opening on the 14th, Winter's Tale. This is your given romantic movie.
This is based on a novel by Mark Halperin, not the Shakespeare play.
Yep. Director Keira Goldsman, starring Colin Farrell and Jessica Brown Finley. Russell Crowe's in here. Russell Crowe's in here as well. I don't know Will Smith was in this.
Oh, I missed that too.
Yeah. That might be a mistake. I'm not sure. But period drama. Kind of a fantasy.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure what's going on. Colin Farrell is like a bad guy.
There's some sort of reincarnation or time travel thing.
Yeah,
happening.
There's some weird fantasy plot going on, but whatever. It's a romance with Colin Farrell.
It's a magical romance.
Sold.
I'm cynical usually at best at romantic fair. Like, romantic fair for me is Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But, this doesn't look terrible. I would not sort of like go, I'm not walking in that theater.
Well, you know, at least the chemistry is good.
Yes.
Yes, totally.
You know, like, nothing's worse than something builds a romance and you look at the two characters and go, you guys don't like each other.
Yeah.
These ones, you can see the magnetism.
Yeah, well, and Ferrell is always pretty good, so they've got that going for them.
Plus, I can always in my head just like replay In Bruges while
You go. That'll make you happy.
That's right.
Also for the 14th, Endless Love. And I just realized.
This is the other remake.
I'm not sure if I saw this trailer. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm not sure I saw this with Gabriella White and Alex Pettifor. Because I'm looking at him like, I don't remember seeing Alex Pettifor in any trailers.
I watched the trailer. I'm not interested in the movie, except, like I said, this is like, not, this is the third remake.
So what is it a remake of?
Endless Love from 1981.
Shit.
I saw the trailer. It did nothing for me. It's your fair that girl falls in girl with overprotective father falls in love with the bad boy or something.
Oh, like
they're vaguely
yeah.
baddish.
Yeah, that's ringing.
Has
a bell.
History or something. And
oh, makes sense.
And she's gonna break loose and follow her heart, kind of crap.
Well, you guys watched the trailer, so let me ask you: is Alex Pettifor at least like seeming decent, or is he just sort of walking
like acting
through the
wise,
world?
Or yeah. just being like kind of hot?
Well, he is kind of hot, yes. but like, can he actually like? Is he doing anything or?
I, you know what?
I'm not the one
it
to
didn't,
ask.
It didn't focus a lot on him. Okay. It was a lot more, like the trailer was a lot more focused on her reaction and her dad and things like that than
I feel really, I'm really sorry, guys. I thought for sure I'd seen all the trailers, but apparently not.
Oh, yeah. Bruce Greenwood and
Bruce Greenwood.
Jolie Richardson, Robert Patrick.
I really like Bruce Greenwood.
Gabriella Wilde, I'm not familiar
I'm
with
I'm really
her.
The wrong person
Emma
to gauge most romantic.
Yeah. I you know, you can get me on board for a rom-com, but a straight-out romance, there's got to be something
Does everyone
special
die
about
in
it.
The end?
Yes.
Well, I'm on board.
Have you been watching Helix?
No, I haven't.
Because I think you would really like the theme music for Helix.
I'll have to check it out. I've been sort of caught in a whirlwind of... Psych.
Oh yeah, you were mentioning.
Yeah, it
that.
Showed up on Netflix, and I'm like, okay, I'll watch one or two episodes, and now I'm in like season 3.5.
I'm caught up on Sherlock now.
You win.
I have not watched the new season at all.
Speaking of good theme music.
Yes, I know. Right?
Oh God, the twist with his wife is awesome, and that's all I'll say.
I've been holding off for a very, very bad day. To watch my
it's
favorite.
So good. So, which was your favorite episode, 2 or 3, or 1?
That's very hard.
Is it better than season 2, 3? Because that was the best episode I've ever seen of anything ever.
Yes.
Oh.
Better.
Yes.
Holy shit.
I tended to watch them all in one go, so getting like
I got
the story arc okay. What happened in each episode is a little bit...
The second one is the wedding.
The wedding was amazingly
fun. Because that was... My favorite episode was episode 2 with the wedding. It's
okay.
impressive.
We're
talking circles around
3
Colin.
Was pretty
That's
good,
That's perfectly
though.
All right. I'm totally fine with spoilers, man.
No, we're not telling you anything else. But no, for me, it's because usually I find that Sherlock, like the first episode isn't quite as strong and then it gets a little bit better
and
with
it's
the second
finishing
one.
Finishing off usually the last season.
Season
yeah.
2, though, it the, was 3, 1, 2, and 2 was the weak one.
Yeah, but this one, they're all really good.
Fantastic.
And yeah, episode 2 and 3 are like...
Yeah.
All right.
Word.
Mind blowing.
Maybe I'll not save it for a bad day.
No, you should just. Today it looks like a pretty bad day from here. You would never guess it at my place.
Stephen
Holy
King's
shit.
The mist outside.
I'm going to have to take a picture.
It was clear this morning. It's kind of rolled in. So.
Oh, I hope.
Well, when I picked up Marina, it was bright blue skies, lovely day.
I
across
hope this
the
isn't
bridge
rolling
into
my house.
We're talking about fog, by the way.
Yeah.
Halfway across the Second Narrows is like, wow, I can't see the car in front of me.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Moving on with the February releases, back on track.
No way.
Yeah, probably best to skip them. Pompeii. Fuck me.
This looks so horrible.
Not based on any story, historic or otherwise, that I can tell. Looks like an original screenplay.
Who lives? Who survives? Like, what the hell?
None of them. It's fucking Pompeii. They all fucking die.
I think we might know the end, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Jon Snow.
Yeah, that's right.
See, the only thing I'm thinking of is like Titanic, but actually in this one, everyone dies, so it might have a happy ending.
Oh, happy ending for Colleen. Everybody dies.
Usually.
So Pompeii starring as
Jon Snow.
Dale alluded to Jon Snow. Kit Harington stars with Emily Browning as his love interest. Carrie Ann Moss.
Oh, how far has she fallen?
Oh, fuck. I don't even know.
Everyone needs a paycheck.
Directed by Paul W.S. Anderson. not the best Anderson, but whatever.
Shot in Toronto by Constantine, right?
Yep. Well, it's I think it's Canadian copro.
Yeah.
All of Anderson's movies are copros.
If Constantine Studios are involved, then yeah. They're Canadian, aren't they?
No, they're German.
Oh, they're German.
They're German.
Oh.
But most, I found the last, because I mean the last bunch of Resident Evil movies, I think they're all Constantine as well.
Yeah.
They're all Canadian copros. They must have like some in with some funding, you know, in Canada.
I think once you found like a good relationship that way, and you got like, because there's so much paperwork and stuff. Like once you got a formula,
yeah, exactly.
Maybe it's an Uwe Vall tax dodge.
Yeah,
you never know.
Well, this goes, you know, a part level above that. Anyway,
yeah, I would think
from
so.
From the looks of it,
but I mean, I can't believe it. Like an epic being shot in Toronto. That just seems so wrong.
Well, you know,
CG-orama. I know, but it just seems so wrong.
Yes, because when I think of Pompeii, I think of Toronto.
Yeah,
it's just so weird. Right?
Just some big ass green screen or something.
I don't even know.
You know,
I think they've even CG'd the abs.
And the cleavage. I mean, that was what, like, the skin was what popped out of the trailer. It's like everybody is really, really pretty.
There
were
ash
no
everywhere.
Ugly people in Rome.
No, apparently not.
They were called slaves.
Yeah. So.
But Jon Snow is. Okay, Jon Snow.
I will say this, it's a brilliant.
They killed off all the bad-looking ones eventually, and they had to pick in the lesser of the good-looking ones.
It was brilliant marketing. Let's take a generic love story, and we'll set it in some place that no one's ever really done a movie on, you know, and just pretend that's the lost leader,
yes.
Pompeii.
I love it. I don't know. I'm making fun of it, but the true reality of things is that I'll probably see it.
Oh, you know, yeah, I'll be eating my words if it's actually a good story. But
yeah,
I'm not worried.
I'm doubtful, but I'm joking about it. But I'll probably see it. Who am I kidding? But yeah, I don't even know.
I'll just watch Joe versus the Volcano.
Much better song. Excellent. Much better choice, I think. Also opening on the 21st. Awesome.
Yes, this is the one that I'm.
3 Days to Kill, Kevin Costner.
You know,
as
my,
a diet secret service agent.
You know my hate love affair with Kevin Costner.
But you're on the love band now.
Luc Besson has screenplay credits.
This is the first one I have sort of seen, kind of thing, since Mr. Brooks, which I adored.
It's kind of like the first he's done since Mr.
God.
Brooks.
I've been waiting for the sequel for Mr. Brooks, actually.
Me too.
I actually am not repulsed by Kevin Costner in this, so it's already past a large benchmark.
I am so thrilled to have Kevin Costner back. Like, seriously, seriously thrilled. I can't wait. I'll be there.
I have some reservations about the screenplay, like the whole mixing in of the daughter.
Yeah.
That's one of those things it's to me, it's a pretty brave move. And if it pays off, it's going to pay off big, but it could so blow up.
I don't think it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be great, but I don't know. There's something really great about having Kevin Costner as a CIA agent or spy or something.
I thought it looked decent.
Fun. They could have taken the whole daughter angle out and like even in that trailer and I would still be there like with bells on my toes.
Agreed. And Amber Heard, man, she is fucking everywhere. Everywhere.
I've liked her since Drive Angry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not complaining. I really like her. She just seems to pop up. I don't know how she has time to be in all these movies.
I'm just kind of surprised, like, Liam Neeson didn't get this role.
Because Kevin Costner said, I'm back.
Yes.
And Liam Neeson just lost
and
his
damn it.
Neeson has his movie coming out,
yeah.
too.
Or Jason Statham.
His last few movies, especially the one where he tried playing the dad, was... Yeah. Well, that one got a sequel, too.
Yeah.
God, lame.
Was that Taken? Or
yeah.
Something? Yeah.
Well, and also from Luc Besson.
Oh,
right?
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean...
I'd forgotten that.
Besson has wrapped up all the older character action movies, which
they're
is fine by
mine.
Me.
Yeah.
They're all, like, stored in,
pretty
like,
much.
Those, like, plastic, like, drawers.
But, I mean, if you had the choice, I would take, like, Costner and everything... And then Neeson, and then Statham.
No, see,
and then go down.
Mine's reversed.
More,
it's actually Statham, then Liam, and then Costner.
No,
yeah, no, for me it's Costner. Maybe
Statham
second,
because
I really like
Liam.
Statham. Yeah, I really like Kevin Costner. I'm so excited.
I've hated him for so long. It's really hard to forgive.
Hit and miss with me.
I like him. And it feels like it's been so long since I've seen him that at this point he could do fucking anything.
And unlike Nicolas Cage, where I swear I'm never going to actually see another one of his films again, and I always do, I almost never see Kevin Costner films.
Also opening on the 21st. Oh, weren't we just talking about this earlier?
Yes.
That's Miyazaki's The Wind Rises.
It's Farewell.
His Farewell. And it looks like this will be the dubbed version.
Yes.
So okay. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Emily Blunt, Jennifer Grey, Mae Whitman, World War II?
It's World War I? I researched the hell out of this one.
Story.
It's based on a short story, The Wind Is Written, by Tiseo Hori, and it's a fictionalized biography of the designer of the Mitsubishi Zero.
Nice.
Mitsubishi Zero. God,
Mitsubishi?
Just washed my lips and can't do a thing with them.
Mitsubishi.
Yeah, the Zero. Basically, he was a airplane designer in the war, and he designed a couple airplanes, failure and not failure. And it's based on his story. It's a fictionalized biography though. So,
well,
it's not just docu thing.
Well, the early reviews for this, because I mean, it played I think TIFF or something, have been exceptional. There have been a few folks that have sort of called foul on the way that the war is handled and the fact that they're building warplanes.
It's a Japanese cartoon.
But when I read the description of this, like I really have to wonder. It's so different from all of his other movies. Like all of his other movies have these really strong fantasy elements. Like, I'm trying to think of the closest one that maybe doesn't, but still does, is Porco Rosso, which the main character is a hog basically.
Yeah.
But then you find out in the course of the movie that that's not quite the case, but it's like this magical kind of thing.
Yeah.
This one just, reading the description, it has a bit of a, I'm trying to find the right, not fantastical, but theological almost, or something like spiritual.
Yeah.
It has this strong kind of spiritual thing, but it doesn't, from the description, sound like a fantasy. And I can believe there's going to be some people that go expecting, a Ponyo or a Castle in the Sky or something. And, it's like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, I loved it. I watched that and just my normal rule of I hate animation kind of thing, like right out the window. And you know what? Time and time again, the stuff that's coming out of that region, I like. Like Paprika was awesome. Persepolis. Like I keep on finding these Sita Sings the Blues. Like just amazing stuff with amazing stories. And then I see like the stuff that we get released here. Like I just can't handle Frozen or anything out of the Disney or Pixar corporation.
I really liked Frozen, so.
I know. I just, there's something, I know there's something about stylistically what's coming out of Asia that blows me out of the water.
We don't get non-children cartoons, or we very seldom get non-children cartoons. Like things that are just like there's some Miyazaki stuff that I don't think I would show to kids. I think they might not be totally bored because of the kind of visuals, but I mean they wouldn't get the story.
Yeah. I think that's what I was getting at. Like the stuff that's targeted at 10-year-olds.
Pixar and Disney, and it's like, the best you can say is like they have a great adult story that the kids can watch.
Yeah.
Well, and it seems to me that the way that things have sort of transgressed over the last few years is that in areas outside of North America, animation is much more accepted as a form of entertainment for everyone.
Yeah.
Whereas, and comics the same. Whereas here, it's like, it's okay to read comics in your 30s, but when it comes to the movies, it's kind of not as okay to watch the animated movies.
Yeah.
It's like, we'll make them live action and spend billions of dollars on them.
Yeah.
So the animation hasn't developed to, like, I think the talent is there, but it seems there's this perception that the public doesn't want to see those stories animated. They want to see them live action, which is really disappointing.
Because like
I say, there's a lot of opportunity for telling really great stories.
When we do get, Miyazaki in particular, but not just him, the foreign animated stuff in, it tends to do well.
Yeah. Because, I mean, there are a lot of people that want that sort of entertainment that we don't really get it here.
It's that whole sad thing. Like the same thing where you get the asshat saying that we can't sell a movie with a strong female character.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully 2013 blew that out of the water.
Yeah, you would think so. We'll see how it goes from here.
I'm actually not optimistic.
Neither am I. I don't think so either, but it's wishful thinking. We have to keep thinking it in order to make it happen at some point.
Speaking of, this was the highest grossing film in Japan in 2013.
Yeah.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah. I think it'll play really well here, I would think. If I'm not mistaken, the Ghibli movies that Disney has put out have all done. They've all performed.
They've cherry picked the most. Yeah.
So they've done quite well with those. And I mean, there are a lot of people that are waiting for this to come out that have heard of it. So
two thumbs up from the anti animation person.
Go see it.
Yeah.
And closing off the month, talking of Liam Neeson nonstop.
Yeah.
His action vehicle. I'll take Kevin Costner. Thanks.
Yeah, I was kind of mad about this one.
Yeah, it's
I can't even remember the plot line.
Something
now.
About Sky Marshal, and they're killing off people every 20 minutes. Yeah, but he's
getting
the one
framed on the plane. Yeah.
Yeah, that one. I know it's so it's kind of it's not even that it's that generic. It's just so meh. You're kind of like meh.
My biggest sadness about this is like he's taking Julianne Moore down the drain with him.
That's the sad part. Also opening on the 28th, maybe not for us, but Son of God.
You know, I'm not so sure about that. At least without seeing the movie, but the trailer actually gave me more of a presentation of sort of like in the vein of the old biblical movies, like the Moseses and the, I can't think of the other one.
Ben-Hur.
That wasn't particularly Christian religious, but it was like it was primarily more just a action drama than the whole spiritual thing emphasized.
Yeah.
At least in the trailer. And I thought, well, you know, this actually stands half a chance of succeeding on that. Like if you can catch the people, like they aren't getting the heavy duty sell, and this is just a story of like some great spiritual person of the past. I almost think that could do like a non divided box office, like get a broader audience. Yep. I don't know that they've achieved that in this one, but
yeah. And I mean, I know that this is the same people that put together the Bible miniseries.
Yeah. And they actually use footage apparently.
Yeah. And it's the same star, Diego Morgado. My mom thinks it's fantastic because he's Portuguese and she thinks it's brilliant.
Well, the producers on this are like Mark Barnett and Roma Downey. Roma Downey is like from Touched by an Angel, played the angel. And I loved her accent. I didn't watch the show, but I loved her accent. She could, well, no, I won't go there.
No accents.
And no, there wasn't going to be, it was going to be a rude Touched by an Angel joke. But anyway.
she could touch me anywhere. No,
rude jokes are fine, just not accents.
And Mark Barnett, who's like, you know, The Apprentice and Survivor.
Yeah,
and
Mr. Reality TV.
Yeah.
Reality TV King.
So, the interesting factoid for me.
Yeah, well, you know, and that whole the Bible miniseries did exceptionally well. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if this did this gangbusters at the box office. It's
kidding? It probably is like a 1 billionth the cost of... Yeah. Whatever the hell Ridley Scott is working on is Exodus, and it'll probably make as much money.
Yeah, you would think maybe. With the Christian market. We'll see how it goes. I mean, I'm certainly curious.
Get all those calling circles from the Passion of the Christ again and networking.
That was don't actually in the back of my mind, too, in terms of like making something that...
The congregations all show up for special movie nights.
That clearly had a very, like a much smaller target audience.
I wonder if Noah is going to go through that same calling list.
Noah, the
Aronofsky one.
Thank you, yeah.
Because I don't know, that. The more I watch that trailer, the more I think this is like a sci-fi movie. That's totally what it looks like to me. And we'll close off with two more movies. Welcome to Yesterday. Small, I think it's kind of indie sci-fi movie.
Oh, just drove me crazy.
About a bunch of teenagers that find the plans to create a time machine and they build it.
Smash my screen.
Yeah.
Really? That bad?
That bad.
I'm working on my time machine.
It's not a very good trailer.
Well, this is... They have broken for me
the cardinal rule.
One of the scenes, the guy is drawing a taking a magic marker and drawing on the back of his neck while he's sleeping. So, yeah. You know, the and as he's drawing, it's appearing on the back of his neck. Yeah. And then, no, he drew it in the past. It would already be there. You fucking idiots.
They
play fast. I mean, it's funny. Like, an equivalent kind of thing was happening on Back to the Future. But that was a comedy. And, yeah. I mean, it was clearly like... We're just making a fun movie here. And I was okay with when Marty's family is just disappearing gradually, right? As a way of building up the tension in the film of like he's gonna disappear. And I'm okay with that. But this you're like a found footage, real kind of hard science kind of thing. And you guys are breaking your own rules. Like, go to hell.
Yeah. Well, I think this is supposed to, they're trying to play off of the success of Chronicle, right? Like a bunch of unknown kids, kind of sci-fi-ish movie, found footage thing, and it's just not working.
That, I think we saw that.
Chronicle? Yeah. I didn't love it, but I thought it was okay.
That kind of rings.
I saw Chronicles of Riddick.
That was where the thing was underground, and the guy had, or was that a different one? His like big ass old fashion video camera and
yeah, that sounds about right.
They got their powers and
yeah the one where they get their powers and they're trying to learn how to use them. The only memorable thing about that movie is Dane DeHaan, who's like appeared out of nowhere and made a career for himself, and he's amazing. But other than that
one
really
was one was okay. The story was kind of in the end not satisfying, but
no, agreed. And
I would be far better with okay that than what I've seen of this.
It's true. And then finishing off the month, The Lunchbox, which I really loved when I saw it at VIFF. Highly, highly recommend it. Irfan Khan, it's Indian. He's a guy. I know I wrote it in by hand if you guys are looking for it.
It's not in mine.
You
like Dale more than me.
No, it's in yours. It's written on the bottom.
I don't.
Where?
On the bottom of the last page. See, look. I didn't write it in.
See? No. See?
But that's okay. Sorry, I've actually seen that trailer.
Je accuse.
No.
Oh, crap. I did an accent. Crap.
But
I broke the rule.
I really enjoyed it. I highly recommend it. It was like the most romantic movie I saw last year. And it's not like super cheesy. And it's Irfan Khan. So,
okay.
You know, it's all good. See it. It's awesome.
I refuse. You have no control over my will.
Damn you. Damn you.
All right.
I'm losing my power slowly. Opening in Vancouver, the Van City Theater didn't have their schedule up yet, so I have no idea what's coming to the
Bastards.
Van City Theater. I know, I'm very disappointed. But the Cinematheque had theirs up. So we have a career retrospective of I'm sure I'm going to pronounce his name wrong. I think it's Jan Nemec. Yeah. And this is the first full retrospective of his career in North America. So that's kind of interesting if you like that. And he's made some very surreal sort of movies. So if you like weird cinema, Cinematheque,
hooray.
February 1st to the 3rd. We're back into the summer, so they're showing De Godard. Yeah, pretty much.
I just don't get the adoration.
No, I'm not a big fan either. No. But it's, you know, it's not for me, but other people love it.
Other people might.
Yeah.
And they might be wrong, too.
And I'm sure in March they'll do their film noir, which they usually get into for the summer.
Yes, yes,
so that's
yes.
always great. But they're also running the Vancouver International Mountain Fest from February 9th to the 15th. I should actually say they're hosting the Vancouver International Mountain Festival. Lots of mid-length and short films. I was looking at their lineup, and like most of it is mid-length, like 40 minutes, and lots of shorts. They do have a couple of really great-looking features, including Maiden Trip, which just played at the Van City, about the young, the 14-year-old girl that's trying to be the first to sail around the world by herself. Mm. And then The Summit, which I think played VIFF. And has already played Vancouver before, about the plane crash or the expedition. I can't remember 100%, but apparently very, very good.
Was Mountain Runners on the list at all?
No.
Damn. I really want to see it on the big screen.
I know. I looked. I didn't see it there.
Yeah.
Sorry. And Cinema Sunday at the Cinematheque this month. Chitty, chitty, bang, bang.
A beloved childhood film for me.
Yep. We're so going. It's a date. Dan didn't seem particularly interested.
Are you serious?
I know.
Dan.
He's crazy.
Why? We'll have to talk about this later.
See, the only
good
parts...
We need to talk to this man.
Yeah.
The only good parts in that film for me were basically in the workshop kind of thing with the Rube Goldberg-esque like And then they went away from that, and it just kind of lost its appeal.
That would be the Benny Hill scenes?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, you found it out.
Oh, God. Oh
my God. Secret kryptonite, Benny Hill.
I can't really complain about Dan, because I dragged him somewhat unwillingly to go see Enemy last night at the Cinematheque. He fucking hates the Cinematheque. And he's like, so where is this movie? I'm like, at the Cinematheque. He's like, oh, God. And he sat through the entire
thing. But they got better seats.
And mostly enjoyed it until the last five, like, 10 seconds where he went. He turned to me when the credits starts rolling and went, what the fuck just happened?
Nicolas Cage next. It was right. It was good right up to the last 2 seconds
of the
film.
I still like Next, so I can't really, you know.
Yeah. Sorry. See, it had a happy ending, and then it got not so happy.
Me and Ebert are the only two.
I liked it when the world was nuked. It was a happy thought.
And, of course, then they had to go back on it.
Oh, it's damn. True. Just end it there.
And I wanted to quickly mention Spark kicks off February 5th to the 8th at the Vance City. So it's all about...
You should let people know what Spark is.
Yeah, so Spark is it's a local branch off of SIGGRAPH. They specialize mostly in animation and special effects kind of stuff. This year, they teamed up with the Emily Carr 3D something or other. There's like a big group of people that are doing 3D animation and teaching classes and stuff.
Is that the regular or the master's program?
I have no idea. I know that there's a group that works out of Emily Carr, okay. And they deal specifically with like 3D and stereoscopic stuff and whatever else. And so this year's conference features a lot of 3D stuff because we had to get a 3D projector for a lot of the presentations. So we're like, if we're going to pay the money for this 3D projector, we might as well get a lot of 3D movies, which we did. So it kicks off on Wednesday with the original Batman, not in 3D. But this is kind of cool because Michael Uslan, who owns the rights to Batman, he bought them in the 70s, and he's been the executive producer on every Batman movie since then.
What you're saying is he's made a whack of cash.
He's made bucket loads of money off of Batman. So he started with the production of the Tim Burton one. He's worked right through all of them.
Wow.
So he's going to come and do a presentation, and then we're going to show Batman afterwards. Huh. So I'm really excited to see it on the big screen. It's the silver anniversary screening. And then we're showing Gravity because we have somebody coming in to do a talk on special effects for Gravity. Cool. So that'll be cool. On Friday, we have ILM head John Knoll coming up to do a talk on the special effects for Pacific Rim. Then we're going to screen Pacific Rim in 3D. It's going to be amazing. Can't wait to see it again on the big screen.
Oh, I'm okay.
I really like Pacific Rim, so I'm very excited. And then Saturday, we're showing Jurassic Park in 3D because Disney did their big anniversary rebranding thingy-majiggy last year. So
is the bar going to serve Jägermeister?
That would be amazing.
Yes.
I don't know if they can. I think they're limited to beer
soft
and wine.
Soft liquor, not hard liquor? Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're limited to beer and wine because that would be amazing.
That would be hilarious. Your Jaeger drinks for the different suits. That would be
and
so
you know,
fun.
And you know,
you could do a contest.
Fuck, and you know,
I need to find a designated driver.
And that would be amazing because the crowd would be really rowdy and it would be a lot more fun to watch.
Oh, man. Yes.
That would be pretty great, actually. Yes. That's a great... I'll have to look into this. I'm going to ask the guys to see if we can get some hard liquor in there. Maybe somebody could donate some. And then probably the thing I'm most excited about is the Sunday classic movie, classic monster horror night, I guess. Though the last one isn't really a horror movie. Well, a monster movie. But neither is the first. The Wizard of Oz in 3D. For the kiddies in the middle of the afternoon. And then
did they actually make that in 3D in the day? Or has that been retro?
I think that's retro.
Okay. Because I'm looking at this when you said 3D. I'm like, God, I'm pretty sure Creature of the Black Lagoon was originally released in 3D.
Yes, it was.
Sweet.
So and yeah. So we've got 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Was that 3D?
It was originally 3D.
Oh, my God.
And Disney is apparently very, let's just say they very rarely let this out of their vault. So it hasn't been seen a lot. And I'm fairly certain that this is the BC premiere.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's pretty great. We've also got Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
That, which is going to be really amazing.
I watched that actually last year. Like, I'm pretty sure I saw it as a kid, but I didn't really remember it. I watched it last year. Like, wow.
I love those films so badly. I love monster films.
It was both like more than I thought it would be and as bad as I thought it would
exactly.
be at the same time.
Well, and the thing is, these were all original.
It's horribly awesome.
These were all originally 3D releases. So, and most of them have been remastered over the years.
Uh-huh.
So we managed to get like nice pristine copies, nice. Which is
and House of Wax is Vincent Price, isn't it?
Vincent Price.
Yes. Wow.
1954 or 55.
In his classic monster movie kind of.
Apparently, this is the 3D on this is really impressive because Tom Charity at the Van City Theater saw it somewhere last year. The new cut that they did because they actually did an original 4K transfer of each of the 3D aspects separately and then combined it.
Cool.
So it's like pristine and apparently it's amazing.
I wish I could see 3D better.
I'm very, very excited. And to make like things even better, Stan Hyde of the Monster Attack team
doing
the intros for all three movies.
So I normally really hate films in 3D, but these just scream
they're
for
classic.
It.
They're classic. And they were originally in 3D, so that makes it all that much more special. So lots of 3D coming to the Van City Theater.
Hooray.
And they serve alcohol. So
I'll
hey.
Be camping
but
there.
Lots of classic.
Are we allowed to bring it actually into these seats?
No.
Because I've done that in the past. I bought the beer and took it to my seat and... I didn't realize it until afterwards that I was probably breaking rules.
I don't know if you can or not. I take it back.
I don't think
actually
you can.
Have a cup and then pour it into the cup.
you can't really see what I'm doing, but
yes. Hey, are you having a stroke? Your eye is twitching.
That's pretty much how I wink.
Do you need medical assistance?
I'm kind of okay with that. Like, I really would not like to like get the seats all stinky, stale, beery.
It's true.
How is that different than full of Coke?
Well,
that beer's not going to be nearly as sticky as Coke.
True, but Coke,
they don't really have
Coke doesn't get stale Coke smell like 3 weeks later.
It's true.
Bring back bad memories.
Do you guys have anything else to add before we wrap this sucker up?
I have one. Since the last podcast I was on, I've discovered an artist out of Chilliwack called Chris Woods, who had an exhibition of Star Wars paintings from the eyes of Vader as his empire is crumbling or something like that. I love them to death, but then again, I'm a Star Wars geek, so it made me very happy. I got to check out some of them out in Chilliwack, and he's selling art prints and they're freaking awesome and everyone should support this guy. We will
link to his website so you can take a look at his stuff because it's pretty impressive.
And God forbid he ever does a Blade Runner exhibition because he's apparently a Blade Runner fan too. I'm going to have to mortgage everything I have to buy the originals. Damn it.
The few that I've seen, impressive.
Yeah. So that's my impressive. Plugging of a local artist.
Anything else we need to plug?
Plug away.
Not from here, don't think.
I guess the Oscars are coming up. Dale's like,
okay.
Does anyone actually watch those anymore?
I,
Marina.
I'm hosting a party, damn you.
I mostly, unless I'm actually going to a party and just hanging out with movie folks, which
is
fun.
You should come.
It's more fun just waiting to see what people like are buzzing about and then watch those takes on YouTube.
Yeah, the 15-second
little sound
thing.
Clip,
yeah, the news the next day.
You know, Emma Thompson coming out half cut.
Oh my God, she wins everything. Emma Thompson wins at life, period.
Yeah.
Go away, everybody else. She's so amazing. Oh my God, I love her.
And
I hope she's presenting
something. Ellen DeGeneres is doing it this year?
Yeah, she's hosting. Yeah, so there will be at least one dance number, maybe more.
There's always dance numbers.
I see.
Ellen can really cut the rug, though,
yes.
So it's all good. But, so that's it for February. It's not looking too atrocious.
I don't know. It's actually, it's
a fairly thin month.
There's like two movies, actually, that I would get off my butt and see all by myself, which doesn't happen a lot of months.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, RoboCop and Lego.
Yeah.
Like
Monument Men for me is an absolutely must-have, and honestly, the one from Gimli Studio, I forgot the name right now.
The Wind Rises.
Rises animation. I totally need to see that, which screams volumes because I hate animation.
I'm curious about that, but I'm actually not rush in a big hurry to see it.
Yeah, me too.
I'll be by myself. If it even comes here, actually.
I think the chances are pretty good.
I think it's
well, the does fact it that come it was out to where I live, or am I having chances... to spend an hour and a half to get downtown?
I think it'll probably play Colossus.
Oh, good.
They have enough screens. I can go to Langley. I think that
it'd be worth the toll.
Oh yeah, Colossus.
I can walk over the bridge. Actually, it takes exactly a half hour to get me mid sprint from my workplace.
Oh wow!
So if it starts at 4, I could have actually walked the rest of the way to. Well, I should think about that more often.
I guess before we wrap up, I just wanted to bring something up because I wanted to get your input on something. I went to a town hall meeting last week about Canadian film because, you know, we're in trouble apparently. Mm-hmm. And it was cost for so I wrote up a little thing on kind of what happened at this town hall meeting. And I was really, really disappointed by the discussion, to be completely honest, because I was expecting to get some feeling that maybe they had some idea on how to fix things. And truth is, they're fucking clueless.
Oh, well. I'm not sure that surprises me, but...
No, it doesn't. To be honest, it doesn't really surprise me either. But I was hoping that something new might come out of the conversation that could show some promise.
When I've had Canadian film, so you almost have to define, and especially for people that aren't familiar with the Canadian system, Canadian film has been explained to me as the film that's made by getting all of these various different government grants scraped together with some amount of private money. So what we tend to get is these films skewed by whoever the juries are for assigning the money out to it, whatever their concept of the films that should be made, which are most often not particularly mainstream. So sometimes you do get some what would otherwise have to be made as indie films made on big budgets that are really good. But you also get a whole lot of stuff that people go like, what the hell? Why was...
I think that's changed over the years.
Has it?
Yeah, I think Telefilm has made a concerted effort to stop making a lot of the... And I think that's problematic. A lot of the sort of weird Canadian fare that we might have expected from like the 70s and 80s. I think they in the mid-90s, they kind of started realizing that they needed to support... that. Canadians wanted to see entertainment and not just, you know, important stories.
Right.
So they started funding a lot of movies that you would kind of look at and be like, that was made here.
Uh-huh. Porky's.
Well, I mean, I think...
Sorry, that always pops in my head for the 70s.
Yeah, but I mean, something like the comedy with Ryan Kwantlen from last year, the wedding one. I can't remember what it's called. It came out, I think... this year are coming out later in the year, which feels like a total, like it's, there's nothing Canadian about it or nothing that says Canada, but it's a Canadian movie made with Canadian dollars.
Yeah. That one about stealing that stone, Scotland had Canadian funding.
Yeah. I mean, that's Canadian.
Yeah.
Right. And again, it's kind of like, it doesn't feel like a Canadian story.
Well, yeah. Set in England and Scotland. And,
yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I think that there's something to be said for, you know, how do you even classify a Canadian? Like, do they have to be just stories that
so
only speak
to how are they in, how are they in trouble?
Well, the problem is that one, the money that there is to fund this stuff is really hard to get, and it always goes to the same people.
Yeah.
And it's usually the people that probably don't need it as much because they could probably raise their own funding. And the other thing is that they don't get seen. Like, there's no opportunities for them to screen anywhere.
You mean the not wide opens for Carl Bessai films?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there really isn't an answer. I don't know. On the one hand, I think it's important to have the Canadian film because you need to have that culture, and we do have a different way of looking at things. But on the other hand, is like, how do you give it an even footing with the American stuff? Can you?
I don't know about that. One thing that I've always annoyed me slightly is the the Oscars, since we were talking about that a few minutes ago. Foreign film.
Yep.
We can't have one from Canada unless
it's French-Canadian.
French-Canadian.
Yeah.
Like, or, what bullshit is that?
Or unless it's Aboriginal and they're speaking in Aboriginal.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you
but
know,
not in English.
You can be British and be speaking in English and qualify for the foreign film, but not if you're Canadian.
No, I don't think you can.
Really? I thought...
No, I think anything that's in an English language doesn't qualify.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah. So, Australia, the UK, New Zealand, none of them work.
So that's why we get so many crappy French films on there.
So, for me to make a comment on that, I think I'd have to understand a lot more.
Well, and I think that that's their problem.
What the thing is, yeah.
I think that that's a huge problem, is that we didn't... There's
advertising.
There's no real classification for what makes a Canadian film. Is it just like Canadian dollars? Well, do you have to be titling a Canadian story?
What makes
a
Canadian and how the system currently works.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I would probably need to have some idea of how it works to know how it's broken. I certainly can't propose how to fix things.
Well, and this is the thing. I think that one of the things that came out of the discussion is that it is broken, because there were people, there were a bunch of producers in the audience that had some complaints and some ideas on how to sort of mainline and fix the like the request for funding and how all the paperwork is filled out and all that stuff, because that apparently the entire process is really convoluted.
I guess, you know, like one of my questions is why do they need to go to that source for the funding in the first place?
That's the other thing. That's exactly the other thing.
And what are the sources of funding out there? And, you know, obviously it's private money in the States. Would be interesting to know what the systems are in some of the other countries.
And one of the things that they were talking about was a couple of the solutions that were offered up was a system that maybe borrowed a little bit from the tax shelter days of the 80s. But instead of giving the tax dollars for making movies, for maybe marketing, because then it would give you a little bit more leeway on marketing Canadian film and for a tax break, mm-hmm. instead of, you know, for making movies that nobody ever gets to see.
Yeah.
And the other option that which I actually thought was quite interesting was the French system. Every ticket sold in France, regardless of what movie you're seeing, 11% of that ticket price goes back to the local industry. The only problem with that is I'm sure the Canadian theaters would just add that as a tax.
Yep.
And you'd just be paying more to see it, because there's no way they're going to give you anything for free.
And let's face it, I avoid the theater like the plague lately.
I mean, and it's already, they're already charging you $13 for a movie ticket.
Yeah.
How much more can you pay?
And you have the people talking beside you.
It's stupid. And then the one that really kind of got people talking was Canadian content laws. And does that even work? It worked for the music. Can it work for movies?
Well, it worked in the music industry in a particular period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that now, so much has changed in the way that that stuff is produced. And particularly with music, like when it was really expensive to produce.
Mm-hmm.
From what I have read, and it's not extensive, CanCon did seem to work for the music stuff. I mean, it forced exposure and it forced production when it was very expensive to do. But now I'm less with so many distribution. I mean, and that's what we were talking about, was a really narrow distribution channel,
mm-hmm.
for getting it out to,
yeah.
to get the sales. So that's really changed now with the internet. And it seems like distribution is all turned around. And I'm not sure that CanCon now makes sense unless you put this really onerous, like you would have trouble even enforcing it.
Mm-hmm.
So production for televisions and movies is like on such a different scale and works so differently. I mean, I don't know. Like, it's a difference between like how many songs are produced a year versus movies.
Yeah.
And how many people are involved in the production of a song versus the production of a movie. Like, there's just...
How many people are paying X amount of dollars to go to a theater to sit down and listen to a song? Like,
well,
you know, the
yeah.
song's on the radio
and
even, it doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah, and people will see, like, typically people will see a movie once and they'll listen to a song many, many, many times.
Yeah.
So those kinds of comparisons start to get hard. And, yeah, like, I'm not sure that, I mean, I would almost take it a step back. Like, why do we need something called a distinctly Canadian film? Like, what the hell is that? Like, people are interested in good stories. Mm-hmm. And I think that the environment now has changed that you can take a story set in Canada, and if it's a good story, you can sell it internationally. Yep. Do we need someone pushing that?
Yeah.
And if you can't, I mean, I'm sorry, if you find an interesting Canadian story and it dies in the box office, you didn't tell it well.
Yeah.
Or people weren't interested in your angle. And it might be a perfectly valid angle, but I'm sorry. It's like, that doesn't mean that it's interesting to
and
people.
And that's one issue. And the other issue is that a lot, their complaint is that a lot of them don't even get to be told on the big screen. And that's sort of what they're fighting for, is they want the opportunity to show Canadian films in Canadian theaters.
Any theater that opens that has more than like 10 screens has to have one dedicated to Canadian film at all times.
But they don't.
I know.
And that's the complaint, yeah. Right? And I don't know if you can really force anybody to fix that.
Sure you can.
No, it's, I mean, you're telling people what to watch. I mean, it's...
I mean, yeah. I do think that there is an argument to be made for the fact that a lot of the time there's a lot of good Canadian film that I would love to watch on the big screen if I ever had the chance to.
You know what? Put Canadian trailers up instead of those god-awful commercials before the film you're trying to see. I'd probably be interested in watching all sorts of Canadian stuff I hadn't heard of.
Yeah. I mean, and there's stuff that's popular. I mean,
because I don't care what Tom Hanks is doing at the moment on some stupid quiz show.
I think for me, the most interesting thing of the entire discussion was that we can't just think of Canadian film as a cultural phenomenon. We need to think about it as a business. That, and this point was made by a film critic of all people, who's also a writer. And he was saying that, yes, it's important to think of Canadian film as being important for our culture, but you need to think of it as, if you could have an industry that could sustain itself, you wouldn't need to rely on the American productions.
I'm with him.
Yeah.
And I think that that is probably the best thing that came out of that entire conversation, is you need to start thinking about how does this industry sustain itself when all the American movies are gone and all the American TV shows are gone. Can we even do that? Like, are there enough productions to support the crews that are out there working? Probably not. But I think he makes a valid point. And I think that that's something that has been missed from the conversation. Because look almost what happened with the BC industry a couple of years ago. A bunch of the shows disappeared, a bunch of the movies left, and all of a sudden it's like lots of people are unemployed. There's no money for them. So I don't know. I don't think anybody had the answers. I thought the conversation was interesting.
I think it's worthy of a podcast all its own.
And
after I get to do some reading, so I'm not just talking out my arse.
Well, and I it'll be interesting to see what happens with, because I mean, it was one of the NDP MPs that sort of put the whole thing together. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when they go back to Victoria and whether anything actually comes of this.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for more Littlest Hobo.
I mean, I will say this.
It's time.
To me, the elephant in the room with that whole conversation is there are a class of movie producers, and I just statistically, this isn't going to be all of them, but they're the ones that get trotted out by the negatives to supporting the industry.
Mm-hmm.
That really do make really marginal stories and are only the favorites to one group or another. They get picked by a jury, like they're not commercial. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really in favor of supporting them. So, I mean, I fall on that. But, I mean, I know what you're saying. I mean, I know now I've met some really good indie film producers that I think deserve a crack at doing something bigger. And they are telling commercial stories. But... Mm-hmm. They haven't made it through the filter, or they don't want to go down to the States to do the story. So I think in terms of selling it to the public, there's some education that needs to happen on that front too, because I think there's a lot of preconceived notions.
Yep.
And I might even still have a bunch of those. In fact, I probably do.
How does Adam Egoyan still get funding? I can't remember the last film of his I liked.
Well, I mean, I'll
or
say
that
this.
Was good.
He exactly.
He does have his commercial audience, though, so.
I guess. Maybe Devil's Knot will dissuade them of that.
Meanwhile, I'm still waiting for Jack Brooks' Monster Slayer 2, which was brilliant, awesome, funny, everything you could want in a film.
I mean, the one of the things that I have... seen observationally, but I have no idea if it's like true as a trend, is you see a lot of people that are Canadian that have a lot of talent that go down to Hollywood and work. Mm-hmm. And it's like the reality is that that's where the big movies get made, and So if you need to do that, that's where you go. Mm-hmm. And how much of the Hollywood movies are really Canadian movies because of all the Canadians that are bringing that sensibility to it.
No.
And what is the percentage of people leaving Canada to go down to Hollywood to work, you know, no. out of the industry?
It's a big
They're
issue.
All Canadian films.
That's right. I like it. or you can just, you know, go with the American perception of things, which is Canada's part of the U.S. Well, so we're counting you in everything that we do.
Yeah, it's unfortunately that happens with some.
Yeah.
There's a very interesting parallel in the technical community with Silicon Valley and all the places trying to create their own kind of environment where things can grow out of. In Vancouver, you hear a strong startup. We've had some successes with things like Hootsuite and Twitter and a couple other lesser knowns that got bought out. Flickr that got bought out. So clearly, what that film critic, like this is one of the reasons what that film critic was saying resonates with me, because I've seen it start to work in other areas where if you can create the environment that really smart people can get together the resources they need to do it, it'll happen.
Yeah.
But again, you know, the reality for that, I mean, if it's a reasonable analog comparing tech to movie, in the end, a lot of those things still get bought up and moved down to the States. So far, Hootsuite's the only one that's resisted.
Yeah, and that's actually it would be really interesting to see. Because, I mean, the thing is, they're going to have to look at some, they're going to have to make some comparisons to outside of the movie industry. And actually, I think the tech industry would be a really good place for them to start.
And even that isn't, like, well-supported by the government. Maybe that's a good comparison then.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what I mean. I think that's a really great comparison. Because, I mean, you basically have two groups that aren't really well supported by the government.
They get lip service.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, conversation worth having. Sorry, I just sort of dumped it on you. I think now we're done.
Yeah, I think so.
For those, I can't remember. I don't know if we talked about it on the last podcast, but Bill Harris and Aidan Charlie.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for the reminder.
Have launched their podcast.
Oh, fuck off. Bill is doing something?
Yeah. Bill and Aidan are doing a podcast. Yeah. It's called The Green Screen of Death.
Oh, thank God. He's actually putting his film insanity towards something evil.
Yeah.
They have one episode at the moment. It was their 2013 Best and Worst Of.
Nice.
We'll link to it in the show notes. Come on by and download that. Add that to your RSS feed. Hopefully we'll get another episode soon. I'm guessing I'm going to leave like 4 weeks and then I'm going to start harassing them about episode two.
Yeah.
Just in case no one's actually heard the podcast before, there's this guy out of Victoria called Pild Harris that comes over and watches like 8,000 films during the Vancouver
Film
Fest.
Well, I think at this point our listeners are probably familiar with Bill because he's kind
Any
of
regulars. Yeah,
yeah, he's basically co-hosted.
He shows up at
the festival movies for like two years, maybe.
I never listened to
and
it.
And they joined us on the Whistler.
Do we actually have people that listen to the program?
I think so.
We do.
Awesome. I just assumed it was just us.
No, it's
talking.
No.
Excuse. No. Oh,
no,
good.
No, there are listeners.
Sweet.
I'm not sure how many of them there are, but there are listeners.
All seven of
know.
You, yes.
People I don't know, even.
Sweet.
Wow, go figure. Hey, I didn't know that. But cool. Yeah, so worth listening to. They really go deep into some stuff. It was a pretty great episode, so take a listen to that and add them to your RSS, because that show is going to be amazing.
Sweet.
If you haven't already figured it out, Bill watches a lot of stuff.
Bill watches everything.
And Adrian is no slouch either.
Adrian is no slouch.
So totally worth listening to. And we will be back in a couple of weeks with our March preview. We're doing well. We're doing very well. 2 months in. We haven't missed one yet. We are going to go for 12.
This is the easy time, though. Okay. Maybe
we'll
not.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so come on by row3.com. Come on by quietearth.us. Check us out on Letterboxd and on Facebook or whatever.
Whatever.
I have no idea where people check us out everywhere. I don't know. We're everywhere. And we'll be back next month with the March preview. So until next time.
We'll see you after the credits.
But you're not home. Your mind is not your own. Your heart sweats, your body shakes, another kiss is all it takes. You can't sleep, you can't eat,
There's no doubt you're in deep. Your throat is tight, you can't breathe. Another kiss is all you need. Oh, you like to think that you're immune to the stuff. Oh, yeah. It's closer to the truth to say you can't get enough. You don't have to face it, you're addicted to love. You see the signs, but you can't read. You're running at a different speed. To love, might as well face it. You're addicted to love, might as well face it. You're addicted to love, might as well face it. You're addicted to love, might as well face it. You're addicted to love, might as well face it. You're addicted to love, might as well face it. You're addicted to love, might as well.
And beside me is 1977 Han Solo. Across the table from me is J.F. Sebastian from Blade Runner, and Merrick, the bassist from the band the Deepest of the Dark Side Thickets. And we had a conversation about the voiceover in Blade Runner, whether it was needed, warranted, or just a distraction.
Oh, yeah.
And it got very heated argumentatively. And like Merrick's ranting away, which was fine, but J.F. Sebastian started getting really sort of personal and bitchy about it. And like, you're a fucking moron and shit like that. I don't handle that well. So that's when my blaster basically gets unholstered and I'm like pointing right at him under the table. And Han Solo like reaches down, puts it and pushes it down, going, "It's 1977. We haven't filmed Blade Runner yet." So then I look at Merrick and I kill my local band crush. It's going to be problematic kind of when I actually meet Merrick. I'm like going, "I killed you in my
I killed you in my dreams."
That's
it was a good Star Wars dream though, so that must count a
for
little
something.
Yeah,
it must count for something, doesn't it? And I got that all on